are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
So we're getting to break your appearance cherry.
I'm excited. I'll never be more excited for a guest appearance than this.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
This is the tops of my fantasy writing career so far, right here. Friends with Fantasy Benefits. So thank you, guys.
Well, that's a really, really sad moment for you.
Thanks for keeping my spirits up.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hooked up with Ralph Lifshitz, completely non-sexual way. Hooked up in a platonic way with Ralph Lifshitz.
Have a hard time imagining having any sort of relationship with Ralph that isn't sexual.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Chuck and Darius. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing excellent, my friend. The baseball season is getting to be fun again because my Brewers are not sucking as bad as they did right after the All-Star break. So a lot of fun things going on and many weird opinions on the way as usual.
Darius, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. I'm looking forward. Maybe we should guess in advance what we think Chuck's weird opinions are going to be. We could have a recurring segment on the show.
That seems like a very, very depressing segment.
My opinions are never too upbeat, are they? They're usually sort of jaded, jilted, if you will.
Yes, they are. Joining us today is a special guest. We have Michael Halpern of the imaginarybrickwall.com and Razzball. Michael, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm pumped. This is the first time I've ever been like a guest on anyone else's show or podcast. So when you invited me, I was excited. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to talking some fantasy baseball. I love it.
So we're getting to break your appearance cherry.
Yeah, this is it. This is my first guest appearance, and I'm excited. I'll never be more excited for a guest appearance than this. This is the tops of my fantasy writing career so far, right here. Friends with Fantasy Benefits. So thank you, guys.
Well, that's a really, really sad moment for you. but thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for keeping my spirits up.
The first step is accepting that you have a problem, Michael, and then we'll move on from there.
This is your show. Why?
We're self-deprecating around here. What can I say?
It's mid-August, and we're still doing like 3 to 4 baseball podcasts a week. So we're a little loopy at this point. But Michael, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, what you do over at Imaginary Brick Wall, and then at Razzball?
Yeah, so I started my website, imaginarybrickwall.com, about a year and a half ago in December 2015. I wrote about fantasy baseball, fantasy football, fantasy prospects. I wrote like TV reviews, fun TV stuff, and did some like misadventures, just funny stuff that happened to me. And people just really digged the prospect stuff a lot. I mean, people like the other stuff too, don't get me wrong. But the prospect stuff, you know, writing about fantasy prospects is not like a completely saturated thing. So people were really liking it. I stuck with that. And then I hooked up with Ralph Lifshitz, completely non-sexual way, hooked up in a platonic way with Ralph Lifshitz for a fantasy baseball prospect podcast, which Razzball picked up. And then Gray ended up asking me to host the main baseball podcast with him. So I'm doing that. So I'm doing the two podcasts. My writing has slacked a little bit on my website, but I'm planning on picking that back up. And I've just been having a lot of fun in the fantasy baseball community, meeting people. Yeah, it's been a blast.
And then where can people reach on social media?
So social media, you can reach me at @imaginarybrickw, because there's a character limit. I didn't know how to abbreviate otherwise. And at Michael C. Halpern. So yeah, find me on Twitter over there.
Nice, nice. Definitely go do that. Definitely check out the Razzball podcast with you and
Gray Albright, obviously famous. Mm-hmm.
And the prospect podcast, because I enjoy listening to you and Ralph, though I have a hard time imagining having any sort of relationship with Ralph that isn't sexual.
It isn't sexual. All right, I enjoy the platonic baseball talk, but hey, you guys get into whatever you want.
All right, let's go ahead and jump right in and talk about things that aren't necessarily sexual. We'll start with Jose Perella. And I don't know why Chuck wanted to talk about Jose Perella. I'm guessing it's just that part of the season. So, Chuck, why don't you tell us, what are your thoughts on Jose Perella?
Well, it strikes me that Jose Perella, who's 27 years old, never really got a full chance at any of his other stops in the bigs. And now he seems to be getting more of a full chance, and there's a lot of indicators that I really like when I see his profile. His K rate's down about 1%. His walk rate is up almost 5% from last year. His soft contact percentage is down 19%, while his medium contact percentage is up almost 14%, and his hard contact is up almost 6%. You know, I think San Diego is the land of opportunity, you know, just like sort of Catholic missionaries of years gone by. And although he's just likely to be outfield eligible next year, I noticed that he went fairly quickly in our three-sport draft. So I think people are sort of catching on that that he seems to be hammering the ball over all over the yard these days. So I'm a little more excited about Jose Perella than you are, obviously.
All right, Michael, what are your thoughts on Jose Perella?
Well, to back up what Chuck was saying, I was most impressed by his exit velocity, which is top 50 in all of baseball right now, averaging 90.8 miles per hour, which is right up there with Robinson Cano, Jose Abreu, Marcell Ozuna, Justin Smoke, Anthony Rendon. And I was a Yankee fan, too. I'm a huge Yankee fan. So he was with the Yanks for a little while. He could hit some frozen ropes, and now his body's in better shape. His swing is a lot more explosive. I was loving that. He really does have an explosive swing. On the downside, he still hits the ball on the ground a lot, about 48% of the time. I think his .293 batting average is probably propped up by a little luck. So I think overall he's more of just a solid player, like a .270 hitter, you know, maybe can approach 20 homers, high teens homers. He does hit the ball really hard. So I think he's a player, and for where he came from and an underrated guy, a success story, deeper league, solid. I wouldn't really be banking on him too hard. You know, he reminds me of Yengervis Solarte, obviously, because the Yankee connection to the Padres, underrated guy. Solid player. I think he's real in that sense, but not I don't see like an all-star here. You know, a difference maker.
Darius, do you see a difference maker in Jose Perella?
No, not at this stage. I don't think he has made some changes. I think there he has going for a bit more of the uppercut swing based on kind of how he looked in the last couple of years to what he's done this season. He certainly had a power outburst at Triple A this year, and he seems to have carried over some of that to the majors. And Michael mentioned the exit velocity, which looks good. So I think he's exceeded expectations in that department when he was expected to be more of an average and speed guy. But I do think he's had a big slice of luck to get to where he is right now, and I expect some fairly decent regression coming. So I think he's kind of versatile. He's possibly multi-position eligible depending on your league. I think he'll probably get used at various infield spots and maybe the outfield again the rest of the way, so that's probably something to look for next year as kind of a versatile utility guy. And he is playing every day and he's batting third, which maybe is not the greatest thing on the Padres, but it counts for something, and he's obviously going to get better counting stats there than he is batting seventh or eighth. So yeah, I think there's a couple of nice changes here, but the sample size is still very small, and I'm certainly not going to be counting on him for anything going forward. But if you're looking for someone to ride who's playing every day the rest of the way, then this seems like a pretty good cheap candidate who's probably still available in a ton of leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I'm about to say something that I'm going to probably say quite a bit over the course of the next, 2 to 3 months. And that is, it really depends for me where he's going next year, where the ADPs lie. I think he could be a nice little cheap option, but like Chuck mentioned, we're in a three-sport draft. He went a lot earlier than I think a lot of us expected him to go. And if that is going to be the case, then I'm going to be completely out, because I do expect regression. This is a guy that hasn't really had a major setback yet at the major league level. He hasn't struggled, and I want to see him struggle and kind of rebound before I'm willing to even buy into this. You know, a little bit higher BABIP than I think we would expect him to carry going forward. He hits a ton of ground balls, which somebody mentioned, and I think that kind of doesn't portend well for him to be hitting a ton of home runs at the major league level. I think he could be like a, 15-8, 15-9 guy with a, 270 to 280 average. But that doesn't really move the needle in the outfield for me. So I'm not really that interested in Jose Perella moving forward into next season. I think you always ride a hot streak. If a guy's hot right now, there's a really good chance Like I was talking about with Lance on the Monday show, you know, there's a chance that he can keep it going. So why not? You know, there's only 6 weeks left in the season. You might want to just take a shot on him if he's available and you need the help. But going into next year, I'm not looking at a guy who's going to be 28 and really getting his first real shot at the major league level right now. All right, let's move over to Carlos Rodon, who is starting to put things together after starting the year on the DL, struggling a little bit. So, Michael, do you believe in Jose Rodon? Carlos Rodon.
Yeah, I was never the highest guy on Rodon. I know prospect lists loved him and all that, and of course I liked him, but the command and control kind of held me back a bit. I love his fastball, but it's not elite. It's not a top-level fastball. It's at 93.5 miles per hour right now. The biggest, obviously his last two starts were excellent. He didn't walk anyone in the last two starts, and he killed it. And his season line is kind of in line with where he's been in his career with a high whip, but able to limit runs. Overall, my biggest concern is his slider is down about a mile, 1.7 miles per hour from last year and 2.3 miles per hour from his rookie year. He obviously had the biceps bursitis. I don't know exactly what bursitis is, but some kind of biceps injury, which maybe is playing into the slider playing down a little bit. Now, fantasy pitching is a wasteland. A young guy with potential, he throws heat, he's got strikeout stuff. You definitely have to be in on him. There's just not that much, you know, young pitching to grab onto. So I'm in him on that sense, but I never quite believed the true hype coming in that he was going to be an ace, and he hasn't been. But moving forward, pitchers take longer to click. The guys click all the time in their late 20s. They get their control, their command down, whatever it is. If that happens, he's got the ace potential. I'm worried, though, he's always going to be a high whip guy. That's my main concern.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Carlos Rodon?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot to learn here. We know the slider can be great. As Michael mentioned, it hasn't been as good as it has been in the past. So hopefully that's just a kind of a remnant of his injury, and that's going to come back to be as effective as it was. Because when it's on, it's one of the best in the game, I think. There are a lot of good components here, but the command has still got a long way to go. And I think he's probably going to be maybe another 2 or 3 years before we can even think about him being at the top tier of the game like people expected he might be. But I think the components are still there. And I think the last couple of starts are certainly encouraging. He seems to be throwing in the zone a lot more than he used to be able to. Whether he's really commanding it that well in the zone or not, I'm not sure. I think probably this is more a function of just trying to get it in the zone at all and maybe figure out the command in the future. And I'm not sure that the third pitch has come along to the point where he can really be a top-level starter either. He's been using that sinker a lot lately, and the changeup has been good at times, but it can also get hit very hard when he doesn't have the feel for it. So, there's a lot of things to work on here, and I don't think he's getting a lot of help from his team or his catchers either, who are not good framers. So, as Michael said, he's a young guy, still just 24. He's got a ton of upside, but I think you're probably just taking a gamble if you start him at this point, and you could really get anything ranging from the last couple of starts to, you know, a 4 or 5 walk start with a ton of earned runs. So it's kind of one of those things, a lot of outcomes I see going forward, and I'd like to see him get a full healthy season in next year and see what he can do with that.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Rodon?
Okay, I'm going to mention a couple of stats, and then I'm going to send this back to Darius, which I know is not our normal progression on this show, but you'll understand why when I get done. Okay, first of all, I wanted to note for people his innings count, because I think next year with the White Sox not contending, I think they're likely to have him on an innings count, okay, if you're looking to trade for him in a keeper league, et cetera, dynasty, what have you. Okay, in 2015, he pitched 149 and a third total innings. In 2016, he pitched 168 and two-thirds. This year, he's got 60 and a third so far. So next year, even if he pitches well, White Sox want to build around him. I kind of feel like they're not going to let him jump too high. I don't think he's going to be one of those guys that goes up to 180 or 200 innings. But now I want to delve into the dark mechanizations of our friend Darius's mind, because I'm trying to figure out, and I mean this in an informative way, I want him to explain to me what the difference is between Carlos Rodon of 2017 and Robbie Ray of 2016, who Robbie Ray's whip last in 2016 was higher than Chris Sale's ERA is this year. So I'm trying to figure out I'm trying to figure out why he had a poster of Robbie Ray up over his bed and why he is clearly not on Carlos Rodon. I want to know.
Well, he mentioned one of the reasons, which is durability. He hasn't got anywhere near the innings. One thing you could say for Ray last year was that he pitched a ton of innings, and it's only a freak injury that's knocked him out this season. He was well on course for getting to 200. So that's one reason for me. I think Ray's fastball is a lot better. It's got much higher velocity. I think hitters have a much harder time dealing with it. So that's a pretty significant component for me. And the strikeouts were just greater. I mean, I know Rodon has got good strikeout rate, but Ray's strikeouts were insane last year, and he carried that over to this year. So I think those are three things right there that pretty clearly maybe rank Ray above. And I don't think he has the same issues with command that Rodon does, even though maybe the walk rate looks similar. I think Ray's kind of with the fastball and his slider, I think those were two pitches that I felt I had more faith in than what Rodon's dealing with now. And we just haven't seen it consistently over a long period of time from him yet.
All right. I think that suffice.
I think Rodon has had surprisingly decent command and control since coming back from the injury. So, I kind of expected him to be a little bit more wild than he's been. And I think he is, while he hasn't obviously been elite or even close to elite, in terms of command and control, I feel like this is a nice, at least a step in a nice direction from what we've seen in the past from him. I think you're going to have to kind of wash out a little bit of this year and look into next year, kind of like how we looked into this year prior to the injury. And prior to the injury, I was high on Rodon, so I will continue to kind of pump that train. And one of the reasons why is I had a nice conversation with Doug Thorburn about him at the Barf draft back in February. And he talked about how, mechanically he's extremely sound, a guy who, has pretty good mechanics. So outside of, the bursitis issue earlier on that seems to be behind him, we shouldn't worry about too many injury issues with him. He gets good momentum towards the plate. I think this is a guy to really look at as a guy who could break out next year. Now, there were some things that Darius mentioned that is a little bit concerning for me, especially for a young guy like Rodon. One, I don't think the defense behind him is great, and I think the catching situation and framing situation in Chicago is absolutely atrocious. That being said, I think Rodon is going to go at a pretty huge discount, comparatively speaking, probably where his talent level lies next year. And if that's the case, I'm going to be all over him. All right, let's move on, talk about Jose Martinez. And Darius, you wanted to speak about Martinez, so I'll kind of let you take it away.
Yeah, I kind of think this is a fascinating guy in terms of his career arc. I mean, he was signed in 2006. It's taken him this long to establish any kind of major league role. He's been in four different organizations prior to coming with the Cardinals. He was in the independent leagues a couple of years ago. So I just think maybe we can shout Cardinals devil magic again. But it's kind of fascinating to me that a guy like this at 29 has shown up in the major leagues and is hitting really well. He seems to have great power. I mean, he's a huge guy, 6'7". He's making a good amount of contact too. He's not chasing too often. Now, obviously, there's a problem with the playing time, and I recognize that with Fowler and Grishuk and Tommy Pham, and they've demoted Stephen Piscotty because Martinez was hitting so well. But what happens when he maybe doesn't get quite so hot and they bring Piscotty back? So I'm aware there's a lot of issues surrounding that, but I think this is a guy who clearly has taken a step forward. He's finally tapped into the power I think his size maybe said he had. And if he can find his way into more consistent playing time going forward, then I'd be kind of interested in him, because this seems like the kind of guy that people might have missed if he kind of goes back down in a couple of weeks and people didn't really even register what he did this season. I think there's something here.
Michael, what are your thoughts on Jose Martinez?
Well, I definitely see what Darius is saying. It is kind of the Cardinals love these guys that hit the ball on a rope, and Martinez does that. Again, overall, I think his biggest problem is he doesn't hit the ball in the air enough. He's at 26.5%. So you can't really bank on the power with him. The average, again, probably a little high on the high side. And he's mostly, I think at the end of the day, kind of a righty platoon bat. So he's crushing lefties. He's hitting 325 against them, with 3 homers and 40 at-bats. Against righties, hitting 267. Also in the pipeline for the Cardinals, you got Harrison Bader, a righty hitter, guy who crushes lefties. Tyler O'Neill, a righty hitter, a guy who crushes lefties. So with St. Louis, I don't think he's even close to their best righty platoon guy. Against righties, it doesn't make that much sense to use them with who they already have in the outfield. Overall, a bench outfielder, but a very good one. And with full playing time, like Darius mentioned, I think he could have a Perella type of season, type of impact, where he hits 270, you know, he gets 15 to 20 homers. But other than that, that's really all I see. Not someone I'm targeting at all. Dynasty keeper, I'm not really on him.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jose Martinez?
Well, I see a bit of a dichotomy going on here, because I think it's very accurate to mention that, you know, that there's been Cardinals devil magic in the past, that, you know, the magic dust has floated over, and all of a sudden somebody we thought was, you know, just sort of org depth becomes a really good player for a while. But most of those seasons, you were looking at a Cardinals offense that was actually pretty prodigious. And this year, I think you're looking at an offense that needs a lot of help. They're using Dexter Fowler as their cleanup hitter right now. And I do think they're going to try and address this offense some in the offseason, which is going to make the playing time even more scarce, or harder to come by, I should say. So the point being is I don't see them having a role for, you know, just they don't have an offense that can support role players that might hit anymore. And they did have that for a long stretch of time. The dichotomy comes in because somehow or another, you know, they're right in the running to win their division, because the Cubs have underperformed. You know, I don't think the NL Central front-running team, you know, whichever team we thought that was going to be, is nearly at the pace that they should be at. So maybe for the rest of the year, you see Jose Martinez have a role, but I think this is pretty much the swan song. He should be happy he hit them at the right time. If it was 2 years from now, he would be getting ready to sell shoes.
That's mean. That's really funny, though. Yeah, I'm kind of going to be with the majority on this one. I just don't know where he gets playing time. I'm going to give you a triple slash real quick. Just to kind of further illuminate your guys' points, the triple slash is 300, 417, 850. That's Stephen Piscotty's triple slash in AAA since being sent down. He's coming back up. He's already got 3 home runs in 24 plate appearances. He's absolutely crushing it down to AAA. I don't think he's going to be down for very long. So when Piscotty comes back up, that'll further complicate things for Jose Martinez this year. So, I mean, I think he's probably, you know, maybe a platoon partner on the short side, and that really isn't super interesting to me, other than like NL only leagues where I'm sure he's probably already owned by this point. So I don't really think there's a ton to grasp onto. It's a nice little story, maybe, you know, short term devil magic by the Cardinals, but other than that, I'm not really that interested. All right, let's move on to J.A. Happ, because Happ is a guy that I think constantly gets overlooked. Has had some rough stretches throughout the season, but seemingly has put things together and is doing really well right now. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on J.A. Happ?
Well, J.A. Happ is, like you said, has had some injuries this year, and he's sort of suffered with the fate of the Blue Jays. You know, a lot of his value last year came from his 20 wins in that campaign. But he's given up more than 3 earned runs only once in his last 10 starts, which in this day and age of pitching makes him very useful for the back end of any rotation out there that had hung on to him through the tough times. I do think he will be vastly undervalued again next year. And the fact that, you know, people used to put him together with Marco Estrada, and Marco Estrada can't seem to get it together this year, I think might sort of have some guilt by association to it, and might hurt his value. in drafts next year, which helps his value when you go out and get him as a fourth or fifth starter. I do fully believe that the Blue Jays will bounce back next year. I mean, I think we've seen recently that Josh Donaldson coming back to full force has made a huge difference for that team. And I doubt Jose Bautista can be any worse than he was this year, although I will be out on him for next year. So I just see a lot of the components when I look at the overall picture, and I say, wow, Jay Happ is probably going to be a pretty good value next year.
Michael, what do you think about Happ?
I happen to think Chuck's right. He will be a good value, and I'm probably part of the problem on that because AL East pitchers, I mean, obviously a deep league, extremely deep leagues, you know, I mean, like a 30-teamer, you don't have as much control over what division you're getting pitchers in. But in like a 12-team regular league, I tend to avoid AL East pitchers no matter what. I just find the level of difficulty pitching there is obviously higher. I'll just, all things being even, I'll try to take the guy in the NL. So I will admittedly probably downgrade him further than he should, because right now his strikeout rate's up toward his career best, not exactly 22.2%. The ground ball rate is at his career best. He's throwing, the biggest difference this year, he's throwing his changeup a lot more. He's throwing it a lot harder, like 3 miles per hour harder. And the whiff percentage on his changeup has been excellent. So there's good signs that he's, you know, that he's a really good pitcher. He's a little older, so there's obviously just risk on that going into next year. Any older pitcher kind of has a little more injury risk. Again, I'm not usually the type of guy to own him, but he always kind of produces more value than I kind of give him credit for in my own personal ranking. So I think Chuck's right on one hand, and on the other hand, I'm the guy who will be passing him up to give him the value. But I generally like him. I see good signs in his profile right now.
Darius, are you in on Happ?
Yeah, I think this is kind of the reverse of a guy like Rodon to me. I think he's a guy who definitely knows how to pitch. He can sequence. He's got good command of five different pitches. Michael mentioned the changeup. He seems to be getting more movement as well as more speed on it, which is a nice combo. He's really consistent with his release points, so I think that's good in the whole pitch tunnel sense, and he gets a lot of weak contact as a result, I think. I can't agree more with the AL East situation. And you're never going to look at his profile and think, wow, these are amazing peripherals. But I think it's been close to 3 years now where we've kind of said, well, Jay Happ's, you know, a middling guy, and he's kind of been maybe getting a little bit lucky. And I'm not sure that's the case. I think he's a perfectly solid option. And if you can get past the fact that he's pitching in a bad division, then I think he's a pretty useful fantasy starter. And he'll probably continue to be underrated because he isn't an exciting name and he doesn't have the exciting numbers.
Yeah. You know, you guys both mentioned the AL East. He's only given up three earned runs once, and he hasn't given up more than three earned runs against the AL East this year, and that was at the first game of the season. Other than that, he's given up two or less earned runs against his division, so I don't think it's as big of a deal as maybe we make it out to be. I mean, this is a guy who's got, you know, strikes out almost 9 per 9. He's walking under 3 per 9. The home run rate is a little bit inflated compared to his career norm, so I would expect that to maybe come back down a little bit going into next season. I think there's a lot to like, and I think he gets overlooked, one, because, like you guys mentioned, pitching in the AL Beast, and two, he's 34 going on 35, and so I think he will be kind of an undervalued target going next year. But this is one of those role players that you can put on your pitching staff and in, you know, in a mixed league that people aren't going to like say, ooh, nice pick, you know, at the draft table. But he gives you a solid amount of innings, and they're quality innings. He helps you in virtually every category, every starting pitching category. And so, I kind of love a guy like Happ because I think he's underwhelming, but is solid enough to help kind of supplement the rest of your, you know, upside picks and your pitching stuff. So Happ is the guy that I like going forward for this year, but that heading into next year, last year of his deal, there is a chance that if Toronto decides that they're going to be sellers in 2018, that they could move him, and virtually anywhere they moved him outside of Colorado would probably be a you know, upgrade in park. So I think his value can only get better going into next season. Let's talk about Trey Mancini, because Mancini was just extremely hot in the first half, really killing it, and is starting to slow down. Still hitting for power, but his triple slash is .243, .310, .478. So, Michael, what are your thoughts on Trey Mancini moving forward?
Well, I think, you know, you're looking at his so 24.6% K rate, 6.2% walk rate, 52.3% ground ball rate. Right there, not a great combination. Very hard to expect the power, the home run numbers to keep playing up as they have been. Now, saying that, he has tons of raw power, and he's hit everywhere he's been starting, you know, freshman year in the Big East. He hit his OPS was 962 right off the bat. So the guy's like just a natural hitter. He's done it all through the minors. He's done it into the majors. He's never a highly ranked prospect. They always question him. The swing has always been geared to line drives, and he's been successful, and he just hasn't changed it. So there really is no reason to change it yet. Eventually, though, I do believe if he wants to be an impact fantasy player and really an impact baseball player in general in this day and age, he's got to hit the ball in the air more. He has the power to do it. I think he's always had good bat-to-ball skills, so I think he has the natural ability to make that change. He's got to do it, though. As of right now, the profile to me says regression's coming, not a huge impact guy. But, like, he has the raw power. So even with the high ground ball rate, I think he can still hit 20-plus homers. But, yeah, not someone I'd buy right now with his high numbers. I'd wait for the numbers to come down.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Mancini?
Yeah, I think this is definitely kind of the peak of where I might expect him to get. He doesn't take a ton of walks. Michael mentions a few too many ground balls here. I think the batting average and the home run to fly ball rate both look high to me. So I think the power is probably exaggerated a little bit. And I think the average is going to come down 15, 20 points at least. He's hitting an okay spot. Obviously, Orioles Park's a great park to hit. And the other parks in that division are nice too. And he's still 25, so there is the chance for him to maybe change his approach a little bit, get a few more of those balls in the air and use that power to actually hit the ball over the fence. But yeah, as Michael said, he's always hit pretty much every level he's been at, and he's continued to do so in the majors, which I think is a good sign for his development. Just for fantasy, I think we'd like to see a little bit more in the way of balls in the air so that he can get into that homer power, because, you know, the 20 to 25 range is not that exciting anymore.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Mancini?
Well, I think Trey Mancini is the kind of guy that fits perfect in my fantasy plans, because I have a tendency to like high average sort of across the board players with my early picks. So this is the kind of chance that I can take a little bit later in my outfield as my third or my fourth outfielder and be pretty happy about it. I did notice that he never hit more than 13 home runs in the minors, which kind of surprised me, because he seems to be like almost a pure power hitter at the major league level so far. But part of the reason that I like him so much is because I think he gets extra leeway when you're trying to help fill in the outfield in Baltimore, because Baltimore has struggled so bad with their third outfielder for, you know, like the last, it feels like the last 45 years. I'm sure it's only been three or four, but the Hyun-Soo Kim experiments, and, you know, every year it seems to be like they're trying to find somebody, you know, Jean-Luc Ricard or whatever his name was, that
Rickard.
Basically doesn't egg.
Are you talking about Joey Rickard?
I am, like, the guy who should have never really existed to begin with at the major league level. I mean, you know, they have had so many problems that I think he's going to get extra leeway. If he manages to hit 245 with power, he's going to get ample opportunity to hold on to that job. I mean, how many times did they have Steve Pierce? Like, Steve Pierce has a permanent locker. Is he going to be back there again next year? I mean, this just keeps happening there. So the point being is that I really think he's going to get an opportunity, and he's going to get an opportunity to adjust. And when a guy's only 25 like this, I think there's a chance that he makes an adjustment, you know? And if, you know, if he absolutely, you know, sucks wretched goat ass next year, you know, and after a month, you can drop him.
Oh, man, sometimes I hate putting Chuck last out of the three people on with me in the podcast, because I can't stop laughing long enough to actually say something. I don't even know where to go with Trey Mancini. I agree. I think we're seeing a few overinflated numbers. I think he will. I think he is taking a step back right now. I think we're seeing it, especially with the second half splits in the triple slash. I think the power will always be there. I think he's a guy that, with regular playing time, could be, you know, 25 to 30 home run bat. I think he's going to hit 25 home runs most likely this year, because the power hasn't necessarily dissipated, even being after struggling. My worry is he's always going to be a guy that kind of struggles to find playing time. And that, to me, spells kind of really bad things for him moving forward. He was taken fairly highly in front of guys like Brandon Belt and Hanley Ramirez in our three-sport draft for next season. I think that's kind of a mistake because the Orioles are a team that's always trying to buy a bat, and I think any bat that they buy pushes Trey Mancini out of the lineup next year. So Mancini's not a guy that I'm necessarily interested in moving into next season. Let's talk about Edwin Jackson. And I mean, I know that this may be kind of a weird guy to talk about in terms of fantasy value, but he's actually been on a pretty decent run, and in a limited sample this year has pitched fairly well in Washington. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Edwin Jackson rest of the way?
Oh, I get it. You want to get my rant out of the way right away.
Yeah.
he's 33 years old. His rookie year was 2003. I seem to recall, and I was going to look it up and I didn't, that he was traded once for like Max Scherzer or something ridiculous like that. When he first got to Arizona, he was acquired for somebody who was pretty good, which is still stunning, of course. And, you know, it just seemed like he's turned into this like major league / minor league driftwood at this point, and he never really lived up to his abilities through all this stretch of time. So, you know, I don't trust him. The only start I've seen him have was the start when the Brewers made it look like they were throwing it up to themselves against him since he got recalled in Washington. So maybe I have a jilted vision of him right now, but I would not trust him for a one start week against one of the little league teams on TV right now. So that's where I stand on him.
He was traded for Max Scherzer. He's also been traded a number of times, including for Matt Joyce, for Daniel Hudson, and I believe Colby Rasmus at one point. So kind of a lot of trades involving Edwin Jackson over the course of his career. But, Michael, what are your thoughts on Jackson rest of the way?
I believe he was actually also traded. Wasn't he traded to the Cardinals and integral in their World Series run when
I believe that's the Rasmus trade.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's been around. But, I mean, I generally agree with Chuck. I don't trust him. Looking at his numbers, so he signed with Baltimore earlier this year. The velocity was atrocious, and he got rocked in Baltimore. Went to St. Louis with, obviously, they're known for their went to Washington, and obviously they have a better park over there. And the velocity has ticked back up on all his pitches, basically to where he was from the season before last. Now, as Chuck said, he was inconsistent then anyway. So it's not like, oh, even if he's back to his previous levels, it's not great. And you can't trust that he's really fully back there. But these starts for Washington, the velocity's been back up. I know he added the cutter last year, which has kind of been effective. He's going to the change more. He's trying to work on things. The velocity's up. So I don't think it's a complete mirage. But, yeah, I don't trust him either. If you're desperate, go for it. But even being back to his original state, not great.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Jackson?
Yeah, I think the guys hit on the main point, which is that I don't remember a time that Edwin Jackson has been trustworthy, even when he was a guy that people were owning more. He wasn't really the guy you felt good about starting. And I don't think a whole lot has changed. It's nice that the velocity is back. The walks have been better so far than they have been in recent years, but he doesn't have a ton of strikeout upside. And history would obviously suggest that there's going to be a blow up coming at some point, and you could get it at any point, I think. If he just comes out and he doesn't have the control, then it could get ugly fast. So, yeah, if you want a dart throw, and probably people have left him out there on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues because he's Edwin Jackson, then go for it. The NL East is bad. The Nats are good. He might get you a few wins. But don't be surprised if he destroys you over the last 6 weeks as well.
Yeah, I've streamed him. I streamed him last week against the Giants. But, I mean, that's really just a really nice matchup at home. Is kind of the only place that I'm looking to use a guy like Edwin Jackson. And so for me, I think the best place you can use him is in nice matchups at home versus in DFS. So, I mean, if you're a DFS player, you're looking for like a cheap pitcher in DraftKings for a GPP, someone who's going to be extremely under-owned, I think Jackson becomes an interesting option then. I can't remember who he's got his next start against, but I believe it's actually a pretty decent matchup again at home. I think it's tomorrow, so I could probably find it out real quick. But I'm a little bit lazy right now. So, I think that's kind of the best place to utilize him, because I do believe that blowups are going to happen rest of the way. The nice thing is the Nationals rotation is a little bit unsteady right now, and so I think he's got a role rest of the way. So NL only leagues, DFS, I think you can use him with some success if you pick your spots correctly, but just know that you are running the risk of getting destroyed on any occasion. But the last three starts especially have been very encouraging, a 3 ERA, over 18 innings, and striking out over 9 per 9 over the course of that time. So let's move on, and we'll talk about Rhys Hoskins. And I wanted to put a couple kind of up-and-coming prospects on here because Michael is such a big prospect guy. Wanted to get his thoughts on Rhys Hoskins for the rest of this season and then moving on into next year.
I basically think the only question with him is, you know, how many home runs. His power is undeniable. He was basically the best power hitter in the minors 2 years in a row with beastly power. You saw the two-homer game Monday, another home. He's got three homers already. He also, you know, good solid contact numbers, 16% strikeout rate. He walks a lot. He hits the ball in the air like 50% of the time. With his power, with his game power, raw power, how often he's hitting fly balls, he makes good contact. Really, I mean, he's in his prime. I mean, he's 24 already. He's ready to go. The sky is kind of the limit on how many homers. I think 30, you know, like 31, 32 is kind of a low, you know, low estimate, a very low estimate. We're 40 plus. If just looking at the stats, it's hard not to say this guy's not going to be a 40 home run hitter. The average might be a little less than where it was in the minors. Maybe he settles in as like a 270 guy, but he's got the ability to hit for a high average too. I just think this guy's power is unbelievable. By the end of September, when his, you know, small sample size numbers come in, it's going to be a legitimate question if, you know, him versus Judge. I know Bellinger is blowing up. Bellinger's obviously the man. But I think his power is on their level where he could really blow up in this last month and a half. I got him hitting maybe eight homers the rest of the way, seven, eight homers the rest of the way. Full season, I think 40-plus is like a reasonable estimate, just looking at the numbers objectively.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Rhys Hoskins?
I love the fact that he was able to have that much power in the minors without striking out a ton. I think strikeout rate is one of the things that portends success most, translating from minors to majors. So that the fact that he was able to show that much power and still not strike out a massive amount was really encouraging to me. I know that AA Reading is a bandbox, and I'm sure Michael can say that, but he carried that over as well to AAA this year. So I think the power is very definitely legit. I know there were some questions about the swing from certain scouts and thought maybe that he would struggle with major league breaking balls. We clearly don't have enough of a sample to see whether that's true yet. So I think that's the main question for me, and whether that really makes his average particularly unpalatable. But yeah, I think Michael's dead right about the power. And I think they'll keep doing this whole experiment with both him and Tommy Joseph, where he just plays left field until Aaron Altair is back. So I think that's at least early September. And then as long as he keeps hitting like he has to start his major league career, I think Joseph's probably the one who's going to have to ride the bench. So yeah, pick him up. He could give you a ton of power the rest of the way. And I think he is definitely a threat to getting that 35-40 homer range next year. And it's just how he deals with pitchers with major league stuff that's the question for me. But I think you can count on the power no matter what.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Hoskins?
Well, as usual, I'm going to go from the macro view to the micro view. And I think what's happening here is I think we're seeing some people with the dog days of summer. We're seeing some fantasy baseball owners as well suffering from prospect fatigue, and in a few different ways. Number one, the Phillies haven't really developed their prospects very well. That was my understatement of the year, by the way. You like how I did that? Anyway, they've really struggled with developing their prospects. So people hear Phillies prospect and they start to yawn, you know, especially when you look at Mikel Franco and his underperforming, and Odubel Herrera hasn't really taken the next step. And then also recent first base prospects. I cannot recall the minor league player of the year from a couple years ago. That was the Houston first baseman who is not playing first base for them.
AJ Reed or Jonathan Singleton.
See, there you go. I think Jonathan Singleton was a Philly too at one time, wasn't he? Anyway, the point being is that I think this is creating buying opportunities right now. And in my Of Note column, which I usually don't mention during the podcast, I talked about fatigue at another position as well, which is, you know, shortstop slash middle infield. And I think Ozzie Albies and Rhys Hoskins are really, really being vastly underrated by fantasy circles right now. When you really look at their age, at their numbers, and I think there's a buying opportunity right now because people are just past the point of trying to figure out what's going on at these positions in particular. And as a side note for Rhys Hoskins, you know, 70 home runs over the last 2 years. I mean, he's somebody that when you get a chance to buy into, you know, this kind of potential, I think you should do it. But as a side note for Rhys Hoskins, I love looking at his first name because with sometimes Y as the only vowel in his first name, I just wonder how many different ways that's been mangled throughout his life.
I really gotta stop putting you last. You know, I'm trying to find a good comp of a major league player that reminds me of Rhys Hoskins, and I'm struggling in doing so. But I mean, here my only issue with Hoskins, because I love him and I think that he has fantastic power. I don't think he can play the outfield for very long, and so I think that may be a short experience. But I think the fact that he's already hitting for power at the major league level and Tommy Joseph isn't really doing much of anything of note, that Darius is right. I think that once Aaron Altherr comes back, you could see Hoskins playing first full-time as opposed to Tommy Joseph. My only worry is how his approach of putting the ball in the air so much will play at the major league level. It reminds me a little bit of what I talked about earlier in the season with a guy like Yonder Alonso, who started putting the ball in the air so much that there was a certain amount of regression that had to come. And I just worry about, in spite of the fact that Hoskins has never really been a big strikeout guy, that he could find some pretty terrible slumps even while hitting for power at the major league level. I mean, even right now, I mean, he's already hit 3 home runs in 25 plate appearances, but that accounts for his 4 hits. He's batting 190. So, I mean, this is a guy that I think could struggle with the average quite a bit. I think on the plus side, he walks a good amount of the time, so maybe that kind of helps him stay a little bit more into the lineup, but I don't think his average is maybe as safe as Michael does, because I do worry that the amount he puts the ball in the air may come back to haunt him a little bit over time. So that's kind of my word to the wise. But I think he is kind of not being maybe getting enough love right now for his ability to hit at a young age in his first exposure to the major league level. Let's talk about Drew Pomeranz, because I think this is a guy that has been a little bit under-talked about as well, so I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it. So, Chuck, what are your thoughts on Drew Pomeranz?
Well, I have owned a large chunk of Drew Pomeranz this year. I thought his shift over to Boston last year when he struggled, I thought, boy, you go from Oakland to Boston. I think humanity in general struggles to go from Oakland to Boston just on a, you know, walking around town level. So I gave him a little bit more of a free pass than most people did. Mostly I've been rewarded for it. When he struggles, he really struggles. He's one of those guys that, you know, Giovanni Gallardo was the Brewer who was like this, where you can look and you can say, well, he's only given up one run. How did he throw 175 pitches in 4.5 innings? Kind of guy. That's sort of the struggling thing that he did, with an exaggeration in there, of course. But the point being is that he's got really good stuff and he's on the right team. And he's made significant strides forward since he's left Oakland. You know, he was good in San Diego, and I like his overall body of work was still better than we thought it was going to be last year. And this year he's an under the radar guy because you got the circus around David Price going on all this whole year long as he's trying to chase after Dennis Eckersley. And you have all this other, you know, circus stuff going on while Pomeranz seems to be ironing some stuff out. You know, he definitely is one of those guys who struggles through his starts, but he's got the right kind of stuff. He's definitely a ferocious left-handed pitcher, and he can rack up strikeouts. So in this day and age of pitching, he's somebody that I think you have to buy into and see if you can catch him on the right side of his performance swings.
Michael, what are your thoughts on Drew Pomeranz?
Well, again, right off the bat, another AL East guy, obviously Boston, so he's not someone I'm personally going to own. Looking at his last, you know, he's been very hot. Looking at his last 10 starts, which has coincided, his velocity took a big dip in the middle of the year. He kind of, first couple starts were good, but when he was struggling, the velocity was down, and it's come all the way back in those 10 starts. He also started throwing the cutter a lot more, which was a big storyline last year, and he wasn't throwing it as much earlier in the year, and now he's throwing that again. So the velocity being back up after the dip, throwing the cutter more, which is one of the big pitches that kind of gave him that little breakout last year. Yeah, I think, again, he's very real. He's going to give you strikeouts. In order to get to the next level, you know, he's kind of just more of a good, solid guy who can strike guys out. He's going to need to, you know, get the third pitch, control and command. It's kind of the story of a lot of pitchers, third pitch, control and command, and he still has that. So I don't see the next level. Pitching conditions, as hard as it can be, Boston, AL East, and, again, not a guy I'm going to have, but he's real, and he's solid. He's solid. I hate these AL East guys. I don't know what to tell you guys.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Pomeranz?
Yeah, I'm kind of going to be similarly down in an AL East context, but this is specifically about Fenway for me. And I think it's just being a left-hander in Fenway with the Green Monster there, so many easy fly ball outs are not easy fly ball outs anymore. And I think Pomeranz has been a little bit victimized by the fact that a lot of those fly balls have been now turned into singles and doubles off the Green Monster. So I think that's kind of limited his upside a little bit. And I think it's meant he's kind of a little bit reluctant to use the cutter as much as he was in Oakland as well, because it always ends up inside. And I think if it's just a little bit off, then that's getting pulled down the line by right-handers. And so I think he's kind of stayed away from that, whether consciously or not. You can see his usage of that pitch is down. So I think that caps his upside for me, unless he finds another way to deal with that, maybe add another pitch or change the location of his current pitches somewhat. But I'm encouraged by the fact that he's still healthy. He's kind of always been a guy who's struggled with that. But he obviously got a career high last year, and he's still got 40 innings to go until he matches that total. So we might be seeing back-to-back seasons of 160, 170 innings from Drew Pomeranz, which is pretty good for him. So that's nice. But I do think that the Fenway effect is definitely going to be a problem for him going forward, and I'm not sure that he can get around to that. So I think, as Michael says, AL East and especially Fenway Park, I think, are going to limit his upside.
Yeah, I see what you guys are saying, and there's part of me that wants to agree with you. But then I look at the results, and at the end of the day, the results are four straight seasons in which he has posted sub-4 ERAs. The last two seasons, where he's got the bulk of the innings, he's got a, you know, sub-3-4 ERAs. You know, he's striking guys out at over a 9 per 9 clip. Doing it, you know, largely in the AL East. I think for me, like, the only thing I'm really worried about with Pomeranz is health. Now, that's a big worry because, I mean, he is a guy that really hadn't, you know, been able to stay healthy his entire career before last year, and there were still injury woes last year in the 170 innings that he did throw. But like Darius mentioned, I mean, he's about 43 innings away from getting back to 170 innings. He's likely to get there unless some injury hits him rest of the way. I think this is a really underrated guy coming next year, and I think people will be kind of scared by the fact that he doesn't have a third pitch, really. He pitches in the AL East, but I think he's shown over the course of the last year and a half that he's able to kind of pitch around that. And so I think I'm going to take the discount if there is one on Drew Pomeranz. I think he is kind of a little bit forgotten about in that rotation. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that, you know, a lot of people are high on Eduardo Rodriguez, and there's a lot of talk about all the issues with David Price and how great Chris Sale has been. But, I mean, I think this guy is a pretty vital and good piece of that rotation that people in the fantasy industry just aren't giving him credit for. All right, let's talk about Rafael Devers, who unlike Rhys Hoskins, is hitting for a fantastic average while hitting for power. He's absolutely just stroking it right now. 348, 411, 667, triple slash, 3 home runs in 17 games. Michael, what are your thoughts on Rafael Devers?
I think this guy is a baseball prodigy. He could have got, you know, he's 20 years old. He's in the majors, kind of that Giancarlo Stanton. He could have got called up straight from Double A. He probably should have been up earlier looking at the numbers. There was no reason. I don't know why the Red Sox were kind of dicking around before the trade deadline. He was ready. I think these prospects are ready earlier and earlier these days with specialization and all that. So I'm for these guys coming up early. He's obviously prepared. Now, you look at the scouting side where, and I've been talking for a year on the Prospect Podcast with Ralph, when you watch him, nobody hits the ball harder than him, and that is coming through in the majors. He's 14th overall in exit velocity, 92.18. So he's already in the elite tier of hitting the ball very hard, and that has always been the case, and that will still be the case. Now, again, looking at more of the, you know, sabermetric-minded numbers or advanced numbers, 21% strikeout right now, 50% ground ball rate. So it's looking at that. You want to completely buy into the scouting that this guy's the real deal, blah, blah, blah. Looking at those numbers, you're like, maybe the power is not completely real right now. Now, again, he's 20. He's got a long way to go. He's got huge, massive raw power. In Dynasty, 100%, this guy's the man. I expect him to make all the changes, do whatever he can. This minute, he also hit the ball on the ground a lot in the minors. So it's hard to say the power is going to continue at the rate it is for just the rest of the season. Overall, I love him. He hits the ball at an elite level. So even with the ground ball rate, when he does get it in the air, it's going to leave the park. I love Devers so much. I think he's a truly elite baseball player. And right up there, again, with the Judge, the Bellinger. Next year is going to be very interesting. I'll be targeting him in every redraft league, depending on where he goes, for sure.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Devers?
Well, I think what we're looking at here, when we look at Rhys Hoskins and we look at Devers, is that you're looking at some guys come up and they start killing it right away, and you know that the league is going to come up with an adjustment, and you find out over time how fast the player can adjust to it, which is certainly understandable, and it doesn't change the long-term validity of Rhys Hoskins and Rafael Devers as players, because they definitely are going to be major league forces for years to come. But exactly how much growth and how much they can keep doing is the rougher question to answer. Now, I did notice that Devers, you know, stole 18 bases in the minors once, so I think he has a decent chance. These are not your grandfather's Red Sox that used to never run, so there's a decent chance that he adds some speed to his profile. I love his prospects of being, you know, a very good player next year. This is the kind of player that could get overdrafted next year. By the time drafts come around, especially if he stays this hot, because I do think there's going to come an adjustment period at some point. But there is so much to like here. He's a wonderful defensive player. You know, you could tell how much he was coveted by the Red Sox because they were offered like almost every single member of the All-Star team was offered for him, I believe. I could be, might be wrong, but it seemed like every other day there was news that Devers was not going to be involved in this trade, because everybody wanted him. So I think of all the players, he's the second youngest player to get called up this year behind Ozzie Albies. And I really, really think that that you should not shortchange the potential value of him going forward. I just think it's a matter of if the performance arc keeps going up this steeply, or if you're going to look at some minor adjustments, and instead of hoping that he's already a 35 home run guy next year, maybe he's only in the high 20s, but he's still going to do enough to be a big help on that team. He's a very exciting prospect.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Devers?
Yeah, I mean, the start couldn't really be any more exciting. At the 102.8 mile per hour Aroldis Chapman pitch that he hit for a home run over the weekend, I think, was the icing on the cake so far. Michael mentioned his elite bat speed, and I think that's really come to play already. I think he's also done a really nice job of not just pulling the ball all the time in Fenway, which isn't a great idea when you're a left-hander. Obviously, you want to use the monster. He's been able to go to left field. He's been able to go to center field without any trouble. So I think all of those signs are really exciting. He is just 20 years old. I think there will be struggles to come. And we've seen even guys like Manny Machado, we talked about last week, with elite bat speed, who if they start making bad decisions at the plate, then things are still going to go wrong. So I think we obviously need to see more from him. He's got a lot to learn as a 20-year-old in the major leagues, and I wouldn't be surprised if Chuck's right and he gets overdrafted next year as a guy with a fairly limited sample size who perhaps won't have really been through that many struggles, and maybe he'll have them next season and people will jump off, and that's when you can get him at a discount. So I think he's definitely going to get a ton of hype if he keeps going anywhere near like what he's done over the past few weeks. But he's certainly got an extremely bright future, and I think he's got the prospect pedigree and the quality to make the adjustments. It's just a case of where is that price point going to be, and is a kind of hot couple of months here going to mean he's overvalued going into next season?
All right. I'm going to preface this by, I love Rafael Devers, and I love his value long term, but man, right now is the time to sell, because you know, I mean, this for me is very similar to what we saw earlier in the year with Aaron Judge and Thames. I think right now you could probably get virtually whatever you wanted for a guy like Devers in a dynasty or keeper league, and I think you could just jump on it. Not that I don't think he's going to be good. I think he is, but I think the perceived value is much greater than the actual value, especially if you're planning on winning next year in a keeper or dynasty league, or competing next year in a keeper or dynasty league, and you're not looking 3 or 4 years out. I think he's going to be extremely overdrafted next year, especially if he can keep up anywhere close to what he's been doing so far over the course of the next 6 weeks before the end of the season. And, you know, if he has a shining moment or two in the postseason, that'll even further complicate things. There's no way that I'm going to have a ton of shares of Devers coming into next year's drafts. I just think he's going to be extremely overinflated. I mean, I love what we've been seeing so far. He's got a really mature approach. He's a really mature hitter for being 20 years old. He's showing some pop, which is really nice considering, you know, I mean, he hasn't been a guy that's necessarily really, I mean, except for the double A start this year, hasn't shown like the immense power that he kind of projects to have. And so I think there's going to be struggles, obviously, next year. But I think people are going to pay like a top 100, top 150 draft price next year. And I think the closer we get to a top 100 draft price for a guy who is largely unproven at the major league level, just screams what we saw from like Carlos Correa, what we've seen from some prospects that have started out the gate hot and then struggled their next season. I'm not going to be able to pay that price. But that doesn't mean I don't love him long term. I've got him in a dynasty league right now, and people have been offering me lots of stuff, and I haven't been able to pull the trigger just because he's been so good. All right.
So what you're saying is you hate Rafael Devers.
I absolutely fucking hate that guy. All right.
You're not practicing what you're preaching. You're not selling.
It's so hard. I mean, it is. It's super hard. I mean, I was trying to trade in a league Darius and I are in a dynasty league. This guy's been was trying to get him from me, offered me Victor Robles and Ryan Zimmerman for him and Derek Fisher. And I just, you know, I'm not necessarily super close to competing. And so Zimmerman, while he makes my major league team better right now, I mean, there's no real sense in sacrificing that much future for Victor Robles. Much as I love Victor Robles. And I mean, that was for me the prize, because I think Robles is a future first-round pick in fantasy for a very long time. But you know, the combination of Fisher and Devers was too much for me to pass up. All right, but enough about my teams. That's going to wrap us up for today. I'll throw Trevor Bauer onto a future sheet. Michael, thank you for joining us.
I had an awesome time. It was more fun than even I expected. I really appreciate it. It was very cool. Thank you, guys. Awesome talking to you, Chuck, Darius, Justin. Yeah, thank you. I loved it.
Thank you. Why don't you again remind people where you can be reached on social media, and then plug all your work.
So you can get me on Twitter at Michael C. Halpern, at Imaginary Brick W. Saturday mornings, the Prospect Podcast, Razzball Prospect Podcast with Ralph Lifshitz every Saturday through the off season, all year round, 52 weeks a year. Catch that. Tuesday mornings, the regular fantasy baseball podcast. That's not prospects, regular baseball players. That's with Gray Albright, obviously the famous Gray Albright from Razzball. I'm having a blast doing that. That's been a lot of fun. And my writing at imaginarybrickwall.com. Like I said, I haven't written quite as much this year, been a little more busy, but I'm always looking to pick that back up more and more. And I focus mainly on prospects, but you never know. That's my blog's my spot, you know, to write wherever I'm inspired to write. So yeah, check me out over there.
Darius, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I want to give the Erie Seawolves a plug. They are the official minor league affiliate of the UK. We had a little competition on the Batflips and Nerds podcast a few months back, and the Erie Seawolves, the Detroit Tigers, the AA affiliate, won the contest. And tonight they are doing a UK night. So this is August 16th. It probably will have happened by the time you listen to this, but I'd recommend people go out and check it out and go through their Twitter feed, because they're doing a lot of fun stuff. They're going to have some of UK fans who have read out their lineup, so that's going to go out in the announcements. I think they're playing God Save the Queen. I think there's going to be a lot of clips and quotes from famous UK figures going on throughout the game. I think people might be getting some Elton John sunglasses. So it sounds like a lot of fun. I would encourage people to check that out. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what they do with it. And I'm also working on a piece for BP Wrigleyville about Alex Avila, with Wilson Contreras going down, and what the Cubs are kind of going to do with the catching situation. So that should be coming out in the next few days.
Chuck, what are you working on? Where can people reach you?
Well, I think I usually compare myself to Skip Bayless because of all my crazy opinions, but maybe I should more compare myself to Kevin Millar, because I work with a lot of serious, smart people and don't usually do serious and smart work per se. right now,
I hope that doesn't make me Chris Rose.
But right now, my of note for the week has sort of an in-depth study showing that that the number of minor leaguers under the age of 24 getting called up is actually going down over time instead of up like we would expect. There's a couple passages in there that I would call fairly pedantic by my own measurements. So if that kind of thing interests you, I would really like that. And Michael and Darius being on the podcast and their astute work would probably kind of enjoy it as well. So that's up at FWFB right now. And other than that, I do these two podcasts a week, and I'm the FWFB baseball year-round guy. So I will not stop doing my column in the off season while everyone else runs around chasing pigskins and watching pumpkins bounce. So,
well, and we as a company will not stop doing baseball. We plan on doing podcasts all year round, try to get at least one to two every week in the off season. You know, maybe kind of different podcast teams, kind of, you know, giving people some days off, because I do football, and you can listen to me on the football podcast, where I'll be recording twice a week moving forward. You can check that out on iTunes. You can also hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Thursdays from 9 to 11 Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific. You can catch that on iTunes if you can't listen live. Or you can also get on the iHeartRadio app or the TuneIn Radio app. You can also read all my work over at FanGraphs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week. You can catch me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Definitely check out all the stuff that's on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Chuck's got his article up there. Darius has written a ton of articles this year that are up there. We've actually got a fantasy hockey writer who is on our fantasy baseball podcast, Andrew Dewhurst. He was on the Tuesday show not too long ago, and he's doing hockey content for us. So if you're into fantasy hockey, definitely check that out. If you give us a 5-star review, that will really help us out. If you do, like you heard on the Monday podcast, you could be entered in to win a free T-shirt. So keep those 5-star reviews coming on iTunes, and get some free swag from us all year long. That is going to wrap us up. For Darius, Chuck, Michael, myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. fire.